This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina Attorney General Josh Stein joined 21 other state attorneys general in criticizing proposed changes by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. HUD is taking on the disparate impact standard. Now, that offers tenants and borrowers protection from housing policies that are formally neutral but in practice are discriminatory. For decades, the courts have cited disparate impact in order to integrate neighborhoods across the U.S. HUD's proposed changes would shift the burden of proof from the landlord or lender to the tenant or the borrower. Stacey Sechschneider is here to tell us about the proposed policy change. She's a professor of law at Tulane University. Welcome to the State of Things, Stacey.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. Tell us about this standard itself, the disparate impact standard. What does it do?
Yeah, so this is a standard that helps parties prove cases of discrimination. You can contrast it with the intent standard that focuses on motivation, like what was someone's state of mind when they adopted a certain decision or policy. Disparate impact is different because it focuses not on the motivation of a person adopting a policy or practice, but on the effects of the policy, on the consequences. And the reason that courts have adopted this standard is that they said, you know, Congress, when it enacted the Fair Housing Act and other civil rights laws like the employment statute, were focused not just on intent but on consequences. And really, this arose in the context of neighborhoods in the United States being deeply divided and deeply segregated by race. And Congress really enacted this statute to address not just isolated intentional acts of discrimination, but policies that kind of perpetuated segregated living conditions and housing inequality.
So you've got this law that's passed in 1968 that recognizes that we have de facto segregation across America. It's here.
Correct.
We got to fix this. We've got to do it through housing policy. We're going to make discrimination illegal. Then through a series of court, and it takes a long time to kind of work through the courts what that actually means.
Exactly.
People bring lawsuits, you know, how do they win them and how do they lose them and how can they prove their case that this, in fact, violates that law? And this is kind of what's at stake here, right? And this standard emerges over this series of lawsuits
that
followed the law.
Decades. I mean, 4 decades of precedent led to the United States Supreme Court deciding this issue in 2015. And Justice Kennedy wrote the majority opinion recognizing that disparate impact was a legitimate method of proof in fair housing cases. It's a very, it's a lengthy opinion. It's a very careful opinion. It relies on the language of the statute. It relies on Congress having a chance to amend the Fair Housing Act and leaving certain language intact and approving amendments that sort of recognize disparate impact theory, and also just the purpose of the Fair Housing Act and what, you know, kind of what led to its passage. So Justice Kennedy and a majority of the court upholds disparate impact theory, and when it did that, HUD had already enacted a rule that set the burden-shifting framework for plaintiffs and sort of how they would actually prove this type of case. But recently, HUD has decided to undertake a wholesale revision of that earlier rule, and that's really what that's a Trump administration, Secretary Carson, proposed rule, and that is what the attorney generals you referenced were opposed to.
So maybe you can give me an example of how that standard would have been employed in a lawsuit. You know, give me an example of how that works and then what these changes might mean in a case like that in what had been a successful case. Is that something that's conceivable? Can you do something like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes, because it's easier when you can break it down and look at sort of how actual parties would be affected. So the disparate impact standard could be used in really any type of fair housing case. There's lots of different protected groups, and so you could imagine a rule that would restrict certain types of income, maybe public assistance income or maybe a certain type of housing subsidy from being used to pay rent. One might argue that kind of restriction would have a disproportionate effect on people with disabilities using those sorts of programs. A restriction on the number of people who can occupy an apartment might have a disparate impact on families with children. A restriction on a blanket ban on criminal records in an apartment complex might have a disproportionate impact on certain minority groups in that community. And then another type of policy that actually Justice Kennedy talked a good bit about was the kind of policy that a municipality might enact restricting apartments or restricting subsidized rentals that are disproportionately used by people of color in the community. Those sorts of policies might unfairly exclude minority groups from, say, a suburb or a county in a certain metropolitan area. So all of those types of policies may or may not have been enacted with discriminatory intent, but if you can demonstrate that they have the effect of disproportionately excluding a certain protected group, then they could run afoul of the Fair Housing Act. And what's key is, however, just establishing a disparate impact doesn't end the case. And this is something that the court made clear in its opinion. The defendant still has an opportunity to come back and say and offer a legitimate justification for the policy. You know, we need this rule because it furthers our business interest, and here's how. And once a defendant does that, a plaintiff may still win the case if they can demonstrate that the defendant can still accomplish its business interests by using a less restrictive rule. And so it's kind of a process of fine-tuning rules to make sure that defendants can still operate businesses in an effective way, in a successful way, but in a way that's has as little exclusionary effect as possible.
And to be clear, that you can't just in these cases show that there is a disproportionate effect. In other words, this is a majority white building, and therefore there must be discrimination. You actually have to point to a particular rule that you say is responsible, and explain how you think that rule is responsible for the effect that you see. So it's not just the effect, not just
exactly.
The rule.
That's exactly right. And I think that is something that Justice Kennedy made clear, that there has to be causation. And what he meant by that was you can't just point to a bottom line statistical disparity. You can't just say your workforce doesn't have enough people of color in certain positions, or you can't just say, you know, this suburb does not have a sufficient number of minority residents. You have to point to a policy such as you don't allow any apartments to be built in your suburb that is having that disproportionate effect. And even then, even once you show that a policy is having an effect, the defendant can still come back and offer a justification. Now, what HUD is doing in the current proposed rule is it's putting all of the burden on the plaintiff before it even files its case to anticipate all of the justifications that a business or a municipality might have. All of the profit motives, all of the policy interests, all of the business interests that it might have. And plaintiff has to plead that the policy doesn't serve those interests. It has to sort of overcome all of those interests in its initial pleading, which really is unprecedented in the civil rights litigation context. This is a type of burden that we've never seen before in any other kind of burden-shifting framework. We don't see it in the employment context. We've never seen it in the housing context. And so it's really unorthodox, and it's kind of a towering standard that I think is going to make it really almost impossible. It's going to be impossible for a sophisticated plaintiff to mount this kind of pleading. And so it's very hard to imagine just an ordinary plaintiff without a lot of resources being able to survive this kind of standard.
What kind of effect do you think this would have if the rules are, you know, we know the comment period has ended, the rules would go into effect. We might expect some legal challenges, but should it go into effect, what would be the impact, do you think?
Well, you know, one of the types of cases that the majority opinion talked about was what they called a heartland case. And a heartland case involves, a government entity that is issuing a policy that unfairly restricts the entry of certain types of groups into a community, residential community. And so I took a look at kind of how that type of case would fare under the HUD's new rule. And I think that those cases that are at the heartland of disparate impact liability, according to a majority of the court, I don't think that they would survive this new HUD standard, because the other thing that this standard does is it drops all reference to segregation. It drops reference to the ability to challenge policies that are perpetuating racial segregation, which was sort of the purpose of the Fair Housing Act, and something that all the appellate courts to consider the question kind of, you know, recognized as one way of showing disparate impact. I don't think that HUD is envisioning that kind of case as being able to be pursued. And the other thing that HUD is doing, in addition to requiring plaintiffs to anticipate defendants' interests, is requiring something called direct cause. And so this is not a term that's used in the Supreme Court decision, but plaintiffs have to show that a policy is not just causing an impact, but is the direct cause of the effect. I think what this means is that plaintiffs may have to do more than just show that, say, a rental ban is disproportionately excluding racial minorities. The plaintiff may have to show that the rental ban is causing the reason that racial minorities need rental housing in the first place.
Stacey, I have to go, but I appreciate your analysis.
Sure.
Stacey
absolutely.
Sec Schneider is a professor of law at Tulane University. There's more of the State of Things just ahead. Please stay tuned.